Welcome to Red Alert Radio, grassroots radio with an ear on the issues that matter to you. Hosted by your local Labour MPs.
Kia ora koutou, ko Julie Ferry toku ingoa, ko Puke Tāpapa, Puke Wiwi, Te Maunga, ko Te Aonga, Te Awa, ko Manakau, Te Whanga. Tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou katoa. Kia ora, my name's Julie Ferry. I'm the Deputy Chair of the Puke Tāpapa Local Board, one of five Roskill Community Voice Reps on that board of Auckland Council, and part of the City Vision centre-left whānau. I have a regular spot here on Red Alert Radio. I'm very keen to get your feedback. And you can find me quite easily on social media once you work out how to spell my tricky last name. I'm on both Twitter and Facebook. Just search for Julie Ferry, that's spelled F for Fred, A-I-R-E-Y. We also now have a Red Alert Radio Facebook page. Search for Red Alert Radio AKL and you should find us. We put up links to the podcasts of these shows once they are available, as well as other bits of relevant news to the show. I've talked with local board members and community types from different parts of Auckland, and you can hear those interviews online at planetaudio.org.nz. Look for Red Alert Radio under R in the programs list. We've got quite an extensive archive there, some really interesting conversations that have been had in the past, and no doubt we'll be adding another one to the vault today. Now, some of my episodes are focused on exploring the value that a left progressive approach can bring to local government and our communities. And I'm returning to that theme today with my guest, Dr. Cathy Casey, Ward Councillor for the Albert Eden Roskill area of Auckland Council. Cathy has a long history of elected service in local government, having served in the South Wairarapa and Auckland City prior to her current stint on Auckland Council since its inception in 2010. She is well known as an unashamed left-wing and feminist, advocating for the living wage, against pokies, and for the right of the vulnerable, in particular the homeless. I first met Cathy through my involvement in the Alliance Party in the early 2000s, which feels like a very long time ago now, and today we are colleagues at Auckland Council and in City Vision. Thanks for joining us today, Cathy. Great to have you here.
Kia ora, Julie.
First up, thinking back a long way to when you were first stood for local government in 1992 in Featherston, what motivated you to put yourself forward?
Well, it's an interesting question, Julie. The South Wairarapa District Council, in its wisdom at that time, were going to contract out all their services, and we decided that the people of South Wairarapa should have a say in that, and I, for one, completely opposed it. I didn't think there was any need to lose jobs, to lose institutional memory for the price of a few dollars. So we formed a group called Concerned Citizens, and we stood for election. And I got elected not just for the Featherston ward as a councillor, but also to the community board, because at that time you got to stand for both. So I was elected to both. So that was quite an unusual thing. And so we stopped the contracting out of South Wairarapa Council's services, and that was a great thing.
Cool. So your motivation was working with others to make a change that you couldn't make on your own, which for me is like a definition of progressive and left-wing approach, and you know, you see that conversation used in unions as well. It's that how do I work together with others to make things better?
That's right, and that ginger group stayed with that council for a very long time thereafter, getting stronger and stronger.
Great. Now, how has your view of the role of local government changed over that time? I mean, you came in thinking about, we want to keep services in-house. Council's role is to provide these services, not to contract them out to others who will provide them. And now you're in Auckland Council, which no offence to South Wairarapa, but is a much bigger beast. How has your view of the role of local government changed from stopping contracting out in South Wairarapa in 1992 to now Auckland Council, huge regional unitary council?
You know, I've been thinking about that question a lot. And do you know, nothing has changed for me. Nothing has changed. It wasn't just about contracting out. It was giving the people a voice.
Yeah.
And that's exactly why I stand today. I stand to represent the people who need representation, to give the people, the minorities, those who, you know, have no contact whatsoever with council, voice, a say in the way their city, their street, their community is developing. So actually, my motivation remains exactly the same today as it did back then.
Wow. And a lot of things have changed, but Kathy Casey's steadfast commitment to political representation remains the same.
That's absolutely right. Yeah. And my love of it, actually. I really enjoy my job. I think it's a really important job. Yeah. I feel privileged to be elected to serve, and I do serve. I like that word, public service.
Yeah.
And yeah, I love my job, but I'm very happy to talk about the changes between South Wararapa and Auckland Council, one of the biggest businesses in New Zealand. Very happy to talk about that.
So, well, that's the next question, really. How have you seen that sort of evolution, I guess, from particularly from smaller councils, and you know, I don't know, how big is South Wararapa?
Oh, look, back then it hadn't started developing yet. It was the outset of Martinborough, the outset of Greytown, so I couldn't tell you the figure, but small towns, small population, large area, very, very large landward area.
Yeah, so probably a little bit like the Rodney or the Franklin.
Yep.
Smaller even than that.
That's right.
And now Auckland Council, huge city of over 1 million people. How have you seen Auckland Council evolve over the last 7 years, particularly since amalgamation, from that smaller, not that much smaller, I guess, but still quite a lot smaller, really, Auckland City to now Auckland Council? And I noticed that a lot of people still say Auckland City Council, which drives me a little bit nuts, because there is no longer an Auckland City Council, and that Auckland City had a very specific culture and ethos, which personally I thought was quite unhealthy, and Auckland Council has an opportunity to bring together the best of all of the cultures, particularly I think Waitakere City Council's culture and Manukau City's Council's culture, and get rid of that sort of nasty divisive stuff that Auckland City had. How have you seen that evolve over the last, since amalgamation, 7 years now?
Well, let me start with South Wararapa and
the change
between being a councillor for Featherston Ward and being a councillor for Albert Eden Ward.
Yeah.
So, South Wararapa, we had one committee, the planning committee, we had a part-time dog ranger.
Right.
And the rest of the decisions were made by the council.
Right,
as a whole.
Wow.
So you really were you saw everything, you got to know all parts of the council. So fast forward to moving up to Auckland and looking at the John Banks Council and deciding that I could do that job a little bit better and put my hand up for, to become to be selected through City Vision as a community independent to stand in the Eden Albert Ward. Delighted to be elected, delighted. But the learning curve, even just from the South Wararapa, Featherston to Auckland City, was huge. It's a city it's a diverse city of many, many different kinds of communities. That was the first thing, and it's a big city. You compare it to the South Wararapa. It's like I've been from one extreme to the other. And when we talk about the amalgamation, it's probably the most possible in the other direction. But moving to Auckland, loved it. I felt part of a team.
Yeah,
there were two other councillors elected at the same time, so we had a really good, strong mandate from the community to do good. And it's about, again, it's like giving people a voice. It comes natural to me. If you speak to people, you know what people want.
Yeah.
And so you are there as their voice. So you try and win them as many things as possible. And keeping services local, keeping services relevant, and giving people the service they want at the cost they're willing to pay.
Yeah.
So that was Auckland City. Now, the amalgamation, like you, I fought the amalgamation. I didn't think it was the best thing for Auckland. We've had 7 years of it now, and there are goods and there are bads, so let me talk about both. First of all, it's a huge business. It's, we are one of 21 governing body members, including the mayor. People, I think, maybe the media, forget that the mayor has one vote and every other councillor has a vote as well. I think that the perception of the council is largely led by the media.
Yeah.
And that really saddens me, because to be honest, every elected member I think I've ever met in local government is doing it for the best reasons. You know, the politics might be different, but they genuinely work hard and they're there to make a difference. And to constantly see Auckland Council, the new Auckland Council, berated in the media is quite saddening, because I think we do lots and lots of good work. And yeah. I'd like to talk about that. Yeah. So I'm going to park the media to one side, because it is a shame, and I don't think we're winning that war. And I'd love to talk to you as a media person about how we can do better.
Very, very, very minor amateur hobby to be a person. Yeah. Sure, I'll have lots of valuable insights.
So I think I said to you, I've been at the two extremes in local government, one where we made all the decisions. And what it feels to me, and I'll speak from a personal position, is that a lot of the decisions are not made by us anymore, that we kind of almost rubber stamp decisions made elsewhere. And I think in particular, I'm looking at the six council-controlled organisations that are so critical to our lives. You know, the transport, we've got our, you know, community facilities. I'll name them. We've got Auckland Council Investment Limited, because that's one of the things we'll talk about, that people don't actually understand how local government works.
Yeah.
So you have the governing body of 20 councillors and one mayor, and we've got 21 local boards, which I'll talk about as one of the great things that we do.
Yeah.
But we also have six council-controlled organisations. So Auckland Council Investment Limited, who look after the ports of Auckland and the airport shares. We've got Regional Facilities Auckland, who look after the art gallery, the zoo, all our kind of major museums and buildings, MOTAT and so on. We've got ATEED. Now, ATEED's, that's Auckland Tourism and
Events and Economic Development.
Yeah, exactly.
So that name apparently was, they chose it during the transition and thought they'd be able to change it later. And people said to them, we don't think that's a very good idea. And they're like, no, we'll be able to change it later. And 7 years later, they're still stuck with it. And I think people would be really resistant to ATEED rebranding because of the cost of that, even though there's constant confusion about what it stands for.
But also confusion with AT.
That's right.
I never say AT. I say Auckland Transport, but lots of people say AT and they think you're talking about ATEED.
Yes. I've had that conversation several times too.
So lots of them, all the major events in Auckland are handled by ATEED, and it's fantastic. Our summer in Auckland, as anyone will attest, is magical. We do wonderful festivals, wonderful events, ratepayers' money through ATEED.
Yeah.
But it just seems to me that the praise for that rests with ATEED and not back to Auckland Council, who pay for it.
Yeah.
More of that later. Water care services, another big one. You know, water care, new change of chair, new change of chief executive, and new changes afoot. I like the way that water care is now operating, but it's been a long time coming. Lots of criticism about their aloofness, their reticence to be part of the Auckland Council family. That is changing, and I'm really pleased about that. And then, of course, the big one, Auckland Transport. Now, Auckland Transport, at governing body level, we have a formal relationship where they report to us about their plans for the future. But I'm also a ward councillor for the Albert Eden Roscoe ward, and that's fallen through the cracks. Auckland Transport talk to local boards about everything. They report to every board meeting. But the ward councillor is left out of the equation. And that's something I raised recently. We'll talk about the governance framework review. So it's an odd job, because you're elected by the ward, but then there is no real ward role with regard to the council-controlled organisations. And a great example of that, I'll tell a wee story out of school, is I went to the Waterview Tunnel opening. And Lester Levy found out that day I was the ward councillor.
Right.
For Albert Eden Roscoe.
And Lester Levy is the chair of the board of Auckland Transport.
That's right.
Yeah.
He didn't know.
Right.
And I thought, that sums it up for me. So that's what needs to change. A recognition that, you know, there are ward councillors, there are local boards, and there are different roles that we all play. And I'll talk more about that later. And finally, our last council-controlled organisation is the new one. It's Pinuku. And again, they have the mandate for urban regeneration. And they're already doing great work in Avondale and in the south. Fantastic. But just even talking about them's taking me 5 minutes, and probably people at home are saying, never heard of those before. So that's what we have to deal with on your behalf, is these CCOs report to the council at the governing body level, and we have to control them through their statement of intent and through the letter of expectation. So what kind of control is that? That doesn't feel to me like real control. My real control is speaking to you and asking you to do something and getting feedback about how you do it, giving you feedback.
Yeah. Mm. It's tricky. It's one of the things I know local boards have been talking about is particularly in the relationship with Auckland Transport, because the relationship there is, you know, they're constantly doing things that impact on a local community. Often very good things, but often with quite low levels of consultation compared to what we would expect, and often with not a lot of notification and communication with the public. And so we've sort of been trying to step into that space and say, hey, look, we'll help with that stuff. We're good at it. We have the links with our communities. And so it's sort of a bit of a back and forth conversation, because in a lot of cases they think we're sort of being a bit over the top about how much is necessary, and we're like, well, we would rather have the conversation first than get the complaints afterwards. But, you know, so it's evolving.
Well, nice segue into one of what I think is the best bit of the amalgamation, which is the evolution of the local boards into real grassroots representatives for local communities. And absolutely, CCOs like Auckland Transport should be putting them up front in their plans, and they don't yet. And I think the delegations that the local boards have are not sufficient. So Auckland Transport, for example, have responsibility for berms, which has always been a sore point. People want to plant them and people don't want to mow them. Streetscapes, town centres, street furniture. You think, well, what's that got to do with Auckland Transport? That's got everything to do with local boards.
Yeah, and placemaking.
Absolutely. That's what we've given the boards. That's one of their delegated responsibilities, is placemaking. And yet we have this kind of CCO out to the side coming in over the top. And that's what you've just mentioned.
Yeah.
Sometimes without any consultation whatsoever. And the first thing the local board gets to know about it is when it's happened.
Yes, so, and when people start complaining to us and going, why is council digging this up when you just did this, you know, you just laid a new footpath. And often in those cases, it's actually service providers. It'll be Chorus laying broadband, or it'll be Watercare. We had one where was people laying a gas main, and it took out an intersection for months. And that intersection had been redone quite controversially by Auckland Transport the previous year. But, you know, no communication about that. So we had to go digging and go, okay, well, who's actually doing this work? Because their traffic management plan is not great for a start. But it had been ticked off by Auckland Transport. But no, so it wasn't until we asked questions, as opposed to, can you let us know next time there's something like this coming up? You know, there must be, you know, red flags go off. Oh, this intersection's going to be impacted for, you know, several months, and actually we did a whole lot of work in this intersection last year, so maybe we should let the local board know about that before it happens, so they can let the community know. And no. But we're working on that, and I have to say the liaison people with Auckland Transport who directly work with local boards are great, and they have been real advocates within the organisation to make those kinds of changes, but change is slow.
Yes.
So, as we know, in council, change is slow. Yeah. So, you've talked about local boards and you've talked a bit about governing body too. How do you feel like the shared governance stuff is going? Because that's something that was unique to Auckland Council when it was established, the idea that we could have shared governance. And from my perspective on a local board, how that seems to be operating is that there's a division of powers, effectively. Local boards, governing body decides that local boards can do this, and everything else usually sits with governing body. The Act, to a certain extent, outlined that basically the principle of subsidiarity, things should be as local as they possibly can be. But lots of local boards would have examples where they feel like governing body has come in over the top. And culturally, within the organisation, it is much easier for a governing body member to get staff to jump and respond than it seems to be for local boards, even when something is in a local board responsibility, as opposed to, you know, governing body members asking, but they're not going to be making any decisions about it. They haven't got any influence on it because it's not in their area. But the local board will, you know, knock, knock on the door, send reminder emails. I've, you know, personally had experiences like that where, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, we'll get back to you in a week. 2 weeks later, you send them a reminder, oh, yeah, we'll get back to you in a week. And it just goes on and on and on. Whereas I know that if it went through a governing body member, they'd get a response a lot faster. So how do you feel like that cultural stuff, that shared governance, co-governance stuff is actually playing out after 7 years of trying?
Well, having gone through the governance framework review, which was a review of the relationship between the governing body and local boards and the CCOs, it's very clear that what you say is a reality for many local boards, that the relationship leaves a lot to be desired. And, you know, I, for one, will be telling Auckland Transport and the other CCOs that their prime concern should be to do it with the local board who represent the local people, rather than do it to.
Yeah.
That's it. It's as simple as that. And if once they get that message, I think things can change. And I'm optimistic.
You're an optimist.
If Water Care can do it, so can anybody.
Yeah, well, that's true. And I have to say, I have seen an improvement with Water Care. A really good example of that is the Central Interceptor, where for a long time it very much did feel like something that was going to happen to communities. And I know some communities do still feel like that, do still have issues around the way that that's playing out. But they have become much more upfront. They have started to have open days. They've put out videos that show, you know, this is the path and this is what it looks like when we dig the tunnel. They have started to get that actually communication to the community, not just to elected representatives or to other staff, is really important. And I guess that's where, you know, I was a bit disappointed in that Herald article about the comms budget, that we're spending too much on comms. Well, my experience is that people are telling me, I don't know enough about what's going on. I don't understand the council organisation and I don't know what they're doing. So can you talk to us more, not less?
That's my experience too.
Yeah. So what, and I guess building on that, what are the most common misunderstandings you come across about local government?
Oh, people, it's exactly as you said, Julie, people don't actually understand. They don't understand which ward they live in. They don't understand that in that ward there is a councillor to represent them at governing body and a local board to represent their interests at grassroots. So that's the first thing we have to build on, that people don't understand how local government works. There's also definitely a blurring of responsibilities between government and
Central government. Yeah.
And, you know, the local MPs will get queries that are actually should be mine, and I'll get queries that I send their way. So there's a kind of, that needs to change too, that, you know, we're very clear about what we do and we haven't made that clear to the public. If people don't know me and what I do, it's not their fault, it's my fault.
Yeah.
And I totally agree with you, we need to do a whole lot better, which is a nice segue into the advisory panels that have now been set up by Auckland Council. And one of the things about my job that gives me the greatest pleasure is I'm the senior councillor to liaise with the 6 advisory panels. Now, these are groups, demographic groups, that traditionally have never really had much of a voice. And we have 6 seniors, youth, rainbow, disability, ethnic people and Pacific people. And I go along to these meetings and it's a joy, because what we've got here are volunteers who have lived experience, great networks and want to give something back. Now so I'm harnessing that energy to do good and to improve the way the governing body does its job, communicating with these disadvantaged groups. And that's great. It's fantastic. Yeah. So I encourage all your listeners, if you know, a lot of these meetings are open to the public, come along and see what these people have volunteered to do. They are wonderful.
And you can find them on the website. If you go for, I think it's in the governing body part of the website, the advisory panels. I've been along to a number of them. Last term when I was a chair, I like to go around and watch other people's meetings and see how they chaired to learn a bit more about them. But in the process, you also, you know, learnt about other parts of the council organisation. I found it a really valuable experience. And, some of the strategic conversations that a lot of those groups are having about, you know, where do we want Auckland to be in 5 or 10 years' time for our specific group, you know, so seniors thinking about what does it look like, not for people who are seniors now, but for people who will be seniors in the future. You know, the conversations they're having and talking about how do we get from here to there. You know, I mean, those are the kinds of conversations we should be having with elected members, should be capable of having right across the organisation. You know, not sort of glorified community grant boards, which, you know, there was a danger that that's what local boards might become, you know, that we might just become bigger community boards with bigger budgets. But actually most local boards, I think, and especially now we've had, we're into a third term, have really embraced that opportunity to be local grassroots, like you say, and, you know, how do we make good decisions for our area and how do we involve people so that it's happening with, not to, as well.
And that's the beauty of the panels. They're not working in silos. We're having integrated workshops with them. And it's amazing how the voices are the same, regardless of which demographic group. It's the same answers to the same questions. Leave the centre and go out to the community is one of them. That's really critical. And that some groups need special ways of being treated and special communication techniques. You know, others don't work, like new migrants. You can't use online for new migrants because, one, they won't have got a computer yet and they won't be doing the Facebook that we think everybody's doing.
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that.
And they probably won't be doing it in English. They'll be doing it in a first or second language, because English will maybe be their third, fourth, fifth language.
So when we say we're a city of 200 different ethnic backgrounds, then we need to actually do something about that in terms of our communication with that. Yeah. With those varied groups, absolutely we do.
We're running almost, well, we're not out of time yet, but I wanted to ask you about something that I know that you want to talk about for a long time, so I'm just warning you that you maybe want to halve what you would normally say for this one. But, you know, you've talked about vulnerable groups and the fact that we need to work differently to engage with them. Homelessness is something that I know is really close to your heart. And I wondered if you could maybe explain, because some people will go, homelessness, what's that got to do with local government? You know, you should just move them on, which not a view I hold. But, you know, they see that would see the local government role as being dealing with the nuisance, so to speak, and that it's a central government role to actually address the reasons, the causes for homelessness. So why are you such a passionate advocate for local government having a role?
That's a great question, Julie, and it's easily answered. Every overseas expert who's visited New Zealand, and I think I've met many of them over the years, have said that our problem is small and can be solved, but it can only be solved if local government, central government, and the agencies working with the homeless and business work together.
Yeah.
So it's everybody's problem. It's no one problem to be solved alone. To do that, we need a government that is prepared to have a strategy to end homelessness in New Zealand. Now, we haven't had such a government till now, but I am so hopeful.
Yep.
This new government, and indeed the Prime Minister herself, knows about homelessness. She's done the Lifewise sleepouts, as have many of the ministers. And now I know that they have the best interests of homeless people, one of our most vulnerable communities, at heart. To solve it, we need a strategy. We need a target to end homelessness in New Zealand, and we need ring-fence funding to fund projects like Housing First to save, you know, to get long-term rough sleepers off the streets and into houses. And we can do it. And so that's the most exciting thing for me, the change of government, is that we can now look at solving this problem, and it's solvable.
So what's Auckland Council's role?
Well, our role has been, first of all, to dispel some of the myths, to advocate for central government to do just what I've been saying. That's our job. We're doing our bit. We have some funding from ratepayers. So we fund Housing First at the moment, which is taking long-term sleepers off the streets, putting them in a house and surrounding them with the services they need to keep them in that house. And it's being really successful. That's just one of the things we're doing.
And so the first aspect of that is, if my recollection is correct, is that usually it's agencies work with a person who doesn't have housing to solve their reasons that they don't have housing, and then they get into housing. But actually the Housing First model is doing it the other way around, getting
That's
them
right.
into secure housing, acknowledging that once you have that, you have a better platform to work on and solving addiction issues or mental health problems or financial disparities.
That's right. And that's been proven to work the world over. So we're trialling it here in Auckland through Lifewise and City Mission, and it's great.
Cool. Well, it's just about time, Cathy. So I know Cathy was a little bit worried that we might run over. We haven't run over. But thank you so much. And it's really good to end, I think, on homelessness, because I know what a personal passion that is for you. And I know that you've done a lot of really good work within Auckland Council and kicking Auckland Council up the butt a bit so that they do what they should do. So thanks for listening, folks, and we'd love to hear your feedback via Twitter or Facebook. A reminder, you can listen again to this interview or any of our back catalogue via the Planet FM website, planetaudio.org.nz. This has been Julie Ferry for Red Alert Radio. Ka kite anō.
Get together with your local MP next week at 9:05 a.m. Or listen online anytime on planetaudio.org.nz/redalertradio.